That's the kind of stuff you have to learn in the South, is which stripes on the snakes are touching to make them friendly or not so friendly. Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. It's been a trying few weeks for Bayern Munich. Between the club's mini COVID crisis, a handful of less than impressive performances, a tumultuous annual general meeting, and of course Robert Lewandowski getting snubbed for the Ballon d'Or for the second year in a row. But the Bavarians will hope to put all of these distractions behind them as they head into a massive Bundesliga clash against Borussia Dortmund on Saturday without at least one key player. Well, I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all of that with my friends Garrett Gerber.
Hello.
And Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
A lot to talk about today, guys, and I think we're going to start with the news that is, I guess, freshest. Just happened last night, but for the second year in a row, Robert Lewandowski will not be receiving the Ballon d'Or. He came second in the vote behind Lionel Messi, and I really don't want to spend an unnecessary amount of time here because, I mean, although the result's disappointing, I guess it's not totally surprising just because of the nature of the reward. And I don't want to take anything away from Lionel Messi, obviously one of, if not the greatest players of all time. But it is kind of hard to look at this as a Bayern fan and totally accept what's going on here. And so Garrett, I'm going to come to you first. I mean, do you think Robert Lewandowski has the right to feel maybe robbed after the award that was given to Messi last night?
Yeah, I think he definitely would be justified in feeling that way. I think it seemed like he was the favorite going into it, and especially given that they basically took the award away so that he couldn't win it last year, he's got to feel a little bit hard done by the whole thing. And I kind of, like you said, it's hard to be like, well, you know, one of the greatest players of all time doesn't deserve the best player of the year award. Like, that feels a little bit hard to make that argument. But I think that given the weight of what Robert Lewandowski accomplished, not only the year prior, but also last year, I think he has to feel a little bit hard done. And the thing is too, is, and kudos to Leo Messi for saying it. They kind of robbed him in 2020 from that award. And so in my mind, I'm thinking that they've got to at least figure in the 2 years then as well. And we talked about it too in chat, like he also didn't win the Bundesliga Player of the Year award somehow. So I don't know. I don't know what else he has to do besides score less goals and win less trophies. But he doesn't seem too upset. I'm sure he's going to be the type of guy that's going to say all the right things in the public. But I wouldn't be surprised if it does burn him a little bit and kind of drive him to play better. It seems like Tim said it several times, like, angry Lewandowski is a good Lewandowski. And I think he's probably going to just use that as more fuel to continue to play super well at what is kind of an advanced age for a lot of strikers. He seems like he's getting better. So I'm not going to complain too much if he's scoring goals for Bayern.
So talking about, you know, not knowing what else he needs to do, the cynic in me really wants to believe if he had made a big money move to Real Madrid or PSG or some other, you know, Chelsea, some other big club in Europe this past summer, regardless of how well he had done since then, I really feel like he would have been winning this award. But because he stayed at Bayern and is still just a phenomenal player, he's kind of getting overlooked. And I say that because, you know, if you look at the top 30, the rest of the players that were nominated for the Ballon d'Or, where is Joshua Kimmich? Where is Thomas Müller, who for the second year in a row is like leading Europe in assists? I mean, you're telling me that the top provider across Europe isn't going to be in the top 30 players for the Ballon d'Or? I don't know. There's obviously some sort of prejudice against Bayern Munich. Sebastian, I know, you know, traditionally I don't want to harp on this, but you're not the biggest Robert Lewandowski fan. What are your thoughts on the whole Ballon d'Or issue?
Yeah, of course you're right. I don't think anybody can say that I'm incredibly biased in favor of Robert Lewandowski here. So I guess you've already said a lot about why Lewandowski would have deserved this in 2020 and probably also would have deserved this in 2021. And of course you're completely right that it's weird to say the least that somebody like Thomas Müller is not even in the like top I don't know how many. So that's just weird. I guess we need to keep in mind a couple of things how this award works. The first thing is this is, and I don't think this has changed. Maybe this somehow got past me and I didn't realize, but I even tried to find out today in preparation for us talking about this today. But this award is for the calendar year.
Mm-hmm.
So does anybody know how Messi has been playing since he's at Paris? I mean, not very good to say the least, really. So, I mean, if this were for the 2020-2021 season, I guess I could see the point, kind of, because, of course, Messi also had a good year until that point. But if we're talking about the calendar year, there's really just no way Messi can be even in the conversation here. If we're going to be honest, right? So this is not like half of the year that he has been crap at Paris, but like more than a third, basically, because, yeah, of course, there hasn't been a December yet and so on. But yeah, this just rubs me completely the wrong way. And I find it particularly annoying that it's Messi. I would have been slightly annoyed if it had been Benzema or like, could have been Salah. That would have been way less bad than giving it to Messi again, because it's not only wrong, it's also extremely boring. I don't know. I mean, this just reeks like, just doing it because he's the greatest, the biggest star there. Of course, we cannot say that, like, as some people have been on the internet, right? People on the internet have been blaming, oh, this is FIFA's doing. Which, of course, is nonsense, because it's not FIFA's doing. This is voted by journalists. Like, I think it's like one journalist per nation from half UEFA countries and half countries outside of UEFA or something like that. And so, yeah, I think we need to keep in mind that maybe not all of the countries are bringing their A game there. And yeah, maybe some of the countries are a bit biased. In some respects, of course, you would not be surprised to see South American countries being somewhat biased, right? I mean, I don't blame them. It's just a question if this is like the best way to find out who was the best player in any given year. So yeah, it's annoying, but it's just the Ballon d'Or. I don't know. You can discontinue that thing for all I care, really, because it's really not worth being annoyed about that every year. I mean, maybe it's going to be slightly interesting once Messi ends his career and also Ronaldo has either deteriorated or is just also has ended his career. Then maybe things are getting slightly more interesting, but I don't know. Maybe they will just find the next guy that they want to vote for every year because he's the biggest name and so on. This is just a bit boring, but this is how these awards are, I suppose.
I think it's kind of funny that they came up with this new award, the like best striker of the year, I think is technically what it is, to give to Robert Lewandowski, just because that to me comes across as an admission of, yeah, okay, this is the second year in a row that you've kind of been robbed. Here, take this award, and hopefully this will keep you happy. And I'm sure Lewandowski will appreciate it, but I do kind of hope that, you know, he sees that, he takes that and gets a little bit upset by it, because like you mentioned earlier, Garrett, and Tim says this a lot, that an angry Lewandowski is a good Lewandowski. And I like the comment that he made when he accepted that award. He was, you know, thankful for getting it, but he was, you know, basically just saying, look, individual awards are cool, but it's all about team trophies, and that's what I'm after. And so, Garrett, do you think that kind of solidifies what we've observed over the last few years of Robert Lewandowski's sort of evolution at Bayern Munich, where he's no longer this selfish, not necessarily selfish, but this individual performance-driven player, and now he's playing more for the team? Because personally, I don't think 4 or 5 years ago we see Robert Lewandowski win that award and make that type of comment.
Yeah, I think I think for sure. I mean, we've talked about it several times. It seemed like for a good little while here that his mentality has kind of changed since he started really taking off. I mean, he's always been considered one of the best strikers in the world, and then in the last few years has just really stepped up to that next level, and it seems to have coincided with the mindset that it's all about helping the team. And you still see, you know, every once in a while, you know, on the pitch, the ball doesn't come to him right, or one of the teammates takes a shot instead of passing it, and it looks like he gets a little frustrated. But usually that happens in the cases where you would kind of expect it with anybody, you know, where he was wide open, or they're losing, and you know, everybody's just kind of trying a little bit extra hard and maybe not thinking as clearly. So it's been this long progression that we've seen, and I think those comments are just, again, more proof that he is becoming more of a player, and it's making it easier to kind of dismiss some of the rumors that we hear as a more of an agent type thing than a Robert Lewandowski generated rumor trying to get more money, but you know, all we see is what, you know, what they want us to see. So it's possible maybe he's not that way, but it's hard to see the mounting evidence that he has become more of a Bayern guy and be real happy about that. Cause like I said, I think he's really, it's coincided with him scoring just boatloads of goals. And I think Bayern will be better for it. Now it'll be interesting to see what will happen as Bayern starts to bring in like the successor. Mm-hmm. That'll be the real test. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him not respond very well to that. But at the same time, if it's you know, a year or two from now, or 2 or 3 years from now, maybe better, maybe you see a little bit more openness to that. But yeah, I mean, we're certainly excited to hear him talk like that, and hopefully it just continues with more goals, and we'll go for 50 next time.
Yeah, well, I think suffice it all to say, Robert Lewandowski is, although the Ballon d'Or may not suggest it was the best player of the calendar year, like Sebastian said, in our eyes, and based on the reactions that people had, I think that we're not the only ones with that sentiment. But that wasn't really the only big news that has taken place off the pitch for Bayern over the past week or so. Earlier this week, Bayern Munich also held their annual general meeting, which is, I guess, basically the best summarization is where all members of the club are invited to partake in essentially like a business meeting where they address more of the business side of the club. And, well, things kind of got ugly, it seems like. There were a lot of unhappy people. And Sebastian, I know that you had a while back planned, or at least thought about planning on attending the meeting, but that didn't work out. However, you were able to watch that. And so I'm going to just kind of turn it over to you to talk about this meeting. You know, what happened? What's the all the fuss about? Why are people so upset? How did the club handle it? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I had an idea of actually going there when the corona situation here in Germany used to be better, but then, yeah, with the whole corona situation and there being limited availability there, they could just let in a relatively small amount of members, so I chose not to do that because that would have been, well, you wouldn't have even known how you would have found a place in there, and you cannot really, because of the rules there are in place, you cannot really like reserve a space or anything. So yeah, it's just overly complicated thing. So what's going on? I think you have described this pretty well. I wouldn't say that it's like only business, so to speak. There's also ceremonial stuff, of course, and it's a pretty long thing. I think it went for like 5 hours or 6 hours this time. And yeah, the most important part was the part that was like nearly skipped. I think we need to keep in mind here that this is a very important thing. This is not just like an event where yeah, they talk to some fans or something, but it's for the membership. It's for all the members, and they actually have quite a say about what's going to happen with the club. So this is like a very important institution in the context of FC Bayern, because as I think most of you maybe know, the club as a Verein basically owns the FC Bayern München AG, which is kind of the part of the organization that's responsible for playing in the Bundesliga and so on. So the actual club still owns like 75% of that and calls most of the shots, basically. Of course, that doesn't mean that the annual general meeting can decide everything. Of course, for that we have also the presidium, the presidency, basically, and other institutions. But yeah, so it's a very important thing, and it's not just the big guys talking, it's also the members talking. So we need to keep that in mind. And the thing that had been all over the media, at least the German media, even before that, was that some members wanted the club to either end or basically not renew the contract with Qatar Airways, basically sponsorship. If you have paid attention to the jerseys, you would probably have seen that has been like on the shirt for a couple of years now. And yeah, they wanted to get rid of that, some of the members anyway, and it seemed like it was a relatively clear majority on the actual annual general it was a majority on the at the annual general meeting. And yeah, I would say that the club handled this in a pretty weird way. The first thing that the club did is they neither accepted the proposal to end the sponsorship, nor did they reject it. They just didn't say anything, basically. What you would usually do with a proposal like that is you would say, okay, this is a fair proposal, this is according to the law, we can do that, and then it will be voted on in the at the annual general meeting. Or you would say, no, there's a flaw with that, there's a certain reason why we cannot talk about this proposal, but that didn't happen. What happened before was that there were two decisions from two different courts. The first one said basically that the club doesn't have to accept the proposal, and the second one said that it's probably not really a thing that should be handled at the annual general meeting. But that being said, of course, the members still wanted to talk about that, and what the people from the AG did, what basically the Vorstand did, like the board members basically, is that they just, yeah, didn't want to talk about it. They basically handled everything else, and then like in the last half hour or something, they announced that, yeah, this will not be discussed here, and we're not going to vote on that. And then basically all hell broke loose. The members were very much against that. They had already been pretty annoyed before that. And yeah, they were going as far as chanting all the time, booing all the time, and even calling things like Heiner raus. So they wanted Herbert Heiner, the president, excuse mm-hmm. me, yeah, the president of the club, to basically leave, to resign. So this is, well, the annual general meeting is a place where there can be debate, and sometimes it gets a bit rough. I think many probably remember the quote from Uli Hoeneß, where he said, well, if there is a bad atmosphere in the new stadium, which was the Allianz Arena, then that's your responsibility, which he was directing at like the fans from the fan clubs, like the ultras and so on. This is probably something people would remember and have probably seen in video. But this was different, I would say, because Hoeneß didn't always get the applause, but he always knew how to rein this in, how to get at least kind of the majority of the fans behind him. But this went much further. Of course, we could argue why that happened, if that was due to the actual hardcore fans basically only being there, maybe because of Corona, because of the whole situation, and so on. But yeah, this was, wow, this was an experience, I would say. And there were also a lot of consequences there, because the fans, the fans. Now I'm saying making the same mistake that Lothar Matthäus was making. It's not the fans, it's the members, of course. The members voted on a couple of things, and some things were not exactly like the club would have wanted that. For example, the members voted against the new Satzung, which is basically the rules that a club has. There was a proposal from the board, basically, and they completely threw that out. And I think it was Oliver Kahn's achievement that they did not get the 75% majority to take the possibility away to sell a further 5% of the AG to someone else, to some kind of partner, like we have done that with Audi and Allianz, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Oliver Kahn spoke up then, and he really tried to calm people, and he did this pretty well, I would say, and he barely managed to, like, it was just a two-thirds majority instead of a three-quarter majority, so this was, he barely managed to keep that in check, and I think Oliver Kahn definitely is the one who comes out of this looking the best, which is not saying much, but still kind of saying much, because the others are looking way worse than this. So, a huge mess. A huge mess.
Hmm. It's kind of a hard topic to really approach, number one, with, you know, unless Garrett was able to watch it, Garrett and I not being able to kind of see it and know what's going on. And plus, a lot of listeners are probably at least unfamiliar with all the details about something like this. And so, I guess a question probably worth asking, Sebastian, is this going to have any significant impact on the club going forward? Maybe something along the lines of the members, not just the fans, but the members in general being more skeptical about Heiner's and maybe even Kahn's leadership, or further, I guess, protests at the games, anything like that. What do you foresee, I guess, going forward?
I would definitely expect protests. This is really the least we can expect. And I think Heiner and Kahn and the others really need to be careful now. And I think they already are. Heiner has said that he's going to call the guy who came up with the proposal, for example. And Kahn, I think, has in a relatively convincing way told that there will be something happening. They're going to really talk to the membership about that, and we can really only hope that this is going to happen, right? Because from how things are looking now, I think it's not possible to renew this contract with Qatar. I think this would be a huge problem. I think what the club tried to do here is being on the side of the sponsor, because of course, and they also said that kind of at the actual meeting, that the sponsors, of course, and the partners have been very important throughout this whole Corona situation, which has been financially difficult even for a club like Bayern Munich, of course. So even with considering all that, I don't think they can renew this contract because they will just not manage to not have this explode in their faces even worse. So what they were trying to do, I think, here was that they kind of probably knew that they couldn't renew this, but they didn't want to say it because, I mean, we don't know. We don't know what's in the contracts there. Maybe they just didn't want to offend the Qatar people. Or, yeah, maybe it's even in the contract that they can't say a certain number of things in this direction, kind of. Like, they cannot say this is a bad situation. They cannot say we're not going to renew this contract, whatever. So all of that is very much possible. Of course, we all don't know what's in those contracts. But by trying to do that, they created this even bigger mess, because now they might still not renew that contract, but they need to talk about it now. And I think what they're trying to do now is to do that in a kind of more silent fashion, trying to involve the members, but not necessarily the media, not everybody. They don't want to blow this up even more. But they want to kind of, in a quiet way, say, listen, I know we are not going to renew this contract, but we cannot talk about it too loudly. I think this is what the club is trying now. But this is, of course, not going to be particularly easy. But yeah, well, they will somehow need to manage this now, because yeah, this is just of course there are fans on the other side who say, ah, why did they make this huge fuss and so on, but I think there are important parts of the membership and of the fans who are really against this. Especially in Germany, the international fans are probably somewhat different, and they just cannot afford to lose them. And I think it says a lot how people like Uli Hoeneß reacted to that. Uli Hoeneß, interestingly, was one of the people who wanted to speak at the end of this meeting, but didn't get the chance to speak, which is also pretty weird. Uli Hoeneß said this was like the worst thing that has ever happened at a Bayern München event or something like that. And he seemed really shocked how this went. Because, yeah, someone like that was, I guess, kind of missing, because you could just feel how, especially Heine and Dr. Meyer, I think, they just underestimated this. They thought they can handle this in this businessy kind of way, like how you could probably handle this as the CEO of Audi or Adidas or a big company like that, right? So they just... didn't know how things work at the club like that, I suppose, and now they definitely have to backtrack and they have to find a solution to get back into the good graces of a big number of fans and members, and that's not going to be easy.
Gotcha. So there's definitely a target on all of their backs. Well, all of that's been going on in the background. Julian Nagelsmann has been having his own, not necessarily his own struggles, but he's been having to deal with some issues of his own, with several players being out due to COVID, and a bunch of unvaccinated players having, you know, their names being thrown into the media. Most notably of all is Joshua Kimmich, who seems like he's just constantly found his name in the media over the past couple of weeks. And in the background, we're leading up to this big game against Borussia Dortmund on Saturday. And sure, Borussia Dortmund hasn't been at their best this season, but really neither have Bayern at times. And so Dortmund are only 1 point off of Bayern heading into the game in Dortmund on Saturday. And it's at least to me, it's got the feel of a really big deal. I feel like this is going to be a big game, especially since Bayern Munich are going to be without one of their key players in Joshua Kimmich. And Garrett, I don't want to really, I guess, overemphasize or overstate his importance, but Bayern really have struggled in recent matches. How big do you think that the absence of Joshua Kimmich, I guess, has been recently, and how big of a hole do you think he's leaving behind in the game against Dortmund on Saturday?
I mean, yeah, like you said, obviously he's a big, it's a big name, big player to be missing. But and I think that we've seen over the past, you know, matches that he's missed, you've seen Bayern be a little bit shakier and kind of lacking some connectivity, so to speak. And on Saturday, the corners and the free kicks were a little bit iffy at times, and sometimes really bad. So you're missing that aspect when you're not having Kimmich in the lineup. There's some other players that we're also missing that I think could help with free kicks and stuff. Sabitzer, for example, is an option and should be healthy for this weekend. I'm really disappointed that he's not going to be available this weekend, because this feels like the Dortmund match that is finally going to be like the one we've been hoping to see for quite some time now, and don't seem to have gotten. We got a couple matches where Dortmund jumped out to a big lead and then just kind of collapsed. We've gotten matches where Bayern have just steamroll them from the get-go, and then maybe Dortmund got a few late ones. But this feels like the type of match that could really be a real back-and-forth slugfest. Kind of almost similar to, clearly not the same level, but similar to how that Champions League final was against PSG a couple years ago, where it was entertaining from start to finish, and even though the score wasn't crazy, it still ended and you said this is a great match to watch if you're trying to understand what a good football match looks like. So I'm a little disappointed because I think without Kimmich in the lineup, that's kind of out the window. This game's going to look a lot different. That being said, we've seen when Kimmich was injured last year, I think it was, time just is not a thing anymore with the COVID stuff. But but I think he missed last year, and Goretzka stepped up in a huge way and became kind of, you know, Leon Goretzka. He became the player that people are expecting him to be now. And so I think, you know, hopefully he won't have to do it too much longer, but I think he could really step up in a big way and become really important in this match. And then you got guys like Tolisso and Sabitzer. I don't know if Raka is healthy or even an option really for Nagelsmann, but I wouldn't mind seeing him at some point, maybe not against Dortmund. But I think that you can fill in if Goretzka is going to step up his game and kind of play in some of the ways that Kimmich does and really provide that stability and that connectivity in the middle of the pitch. But it's a huge, huge deal. And I'm a little bit nervous about this Dortmund match for the first time in quite some time, because Dortmund look like they're getting their feet under them and they're actually starting to find some rhythm. And Bayern have not looked that way recently. So I think Bayern will still win, but we'll have to wait and see.
What about you, Sebastian? I guess, how are you feeling heading into this game? And then also, who would you put forth as the ideal partner for Leon Goretzka in midfield? Because Goretzka will obviously have to play. He's going to be in there. And I actually think Marcel Sabitzer is still injured until the end of the calendar year. So I think our options are Tolisso, Mark Roca, and Nagelsmann hinted about putting Musiala in a position like that. So Sebastian, I'm wondering, you know, what do you think is the best option on Saturday?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I also heard what Nagelsmann said about Musiala. It didn't sound to me like he's going to try that. It sounded like he's probably not ready for that, not in Nagelsmann's system. I think that was the point that he emphasized, that Flick put him in kind of a similar spot, but in a different system. It's a kind of a different ballgame, mm-hmm. literally, kind of. So I would say probably not what we're going to do there. Sabitzer, as far as I know, it's probably up in the air, but not very likely, as far as I gathered. So, of course, I think the most likely guy playing that position would be Tolisso, and he has been looking okay, so, well, that's probably what I do. There are not many reasons that say, okay, it needs to be Roca or something like that, so... Yeah, this is kind of probably also a boring answer, because that has been the answer for years now and it has never been particularly exciting. But yeah, I guess this is what we're going to do. What I don't like is also, I guess I want to mention that Dortmund, while they still have more injuries than we have, there are definitely more players missing from their squad than from ours, but they got Haaland back and he's probably ready to start, I would assume now. So that's something that I really don't like. He played, I think, some 20 minutes or something, or about 20 minutes in the last game. So yeah, this is definitely a thing. I mean, I was kind of relying on Haaland probably being out for that game, and I really don't like that idea, because I think that changes a lot about their offense. That gives them many more possibilities, and they just get immediately way more dangerous. Because scoring goals is kind of a bit of a problem without him, but of course he's a great player. That's why we have been talking about him so much too. So, yeah, I think Musiala could very well be an important player for us. I could see him being helpful in a game like that, but I don't see him starting, especially not on the double six, basically. Even if I would like to see that at some point, I would really like Nagelsmann to find a way to put him there, but I don't think that's going to happen, especially not with him basically also just being back from a break there. Saying that, not to say Corona again, because we have said that enough in this podcast already. And yeah, it's such a depressing topic that I don't want to say more about that, I guess.
I guess while we're talking about the topic of the lineup on Saturday, assuming that Nagelsmann sticks with this almost like a 3-2-4-1, where on paper they write it down as a 4-2-3-1, but it never shapes up that way. Garrett, there's a couple other spots that might be a little bit up in the air. We obviously know we'll see Lewandowski, we'll see Muller. I think Leroy Sané has pretty much nailed down his spot in the lineup, especially after, you know, the way he's been playing and getting that big goal this past weekend. Alphonso Davies, Upamecano, probably Lucas Hernandez are all guaranteed starts, but there's a couple positions that right center back / right back role and also the right winger role are a little bit up for grabs. And there's a couple names in each position, either Pavard or Sula at the back, and then either Coman or Gnabry going forward. I'm just interested to know who would you put to fill in those spots.
Well, first of all, I like the idea of getting Musiala into the lineup, but I'm not sure having a player this nickname Bambi playing the six is something that I really am thrilled about. But as far as your question goes, I would prefer Sula to Pavard at the back. Really, honestly, don't know why, other than just I've liked what I've seen from Sula when he's played the right back position, and I also think that just when he's on his game, and I think he has been recently, he is one of the better center backs that we have. And so I prefer him there. But I wouldn't hate Pavard playing there, because obviously, I mean, he's continually been steady at least. And then at right wing, I would prefer Gnabry, because I just think you kind of know what you're getting out of him a lot more consistently than with Coman, who has definitely become less inconsistent or more consistent. Take your phrasing, but he's become less inconsistent is what I'm going to use than he used to be. But I still feel like there's several games where he kind of doesn't give you anything. So I prefer Gnabry there as well. But even, I mean, maybe there's the place for Musiala. Maybe there is, maybe you stick him on the right wing and let him go to work. But yeah, I think I'd go Gnabry and Sula personally.
Sebastian, I want to hear what you have to say.
I think Musiala would be my first substitute, so I would not start him in this case. I actually think I would, it's hard. I mean, I would go with Coman this time. Because I think he's looked pretty good in the last couple of matches. Usually I'm more of a Gnabry guy, but in this right now, things are standing right now, I'm kind of more confident about Coman there. In the back line, actually I would like to say Stanisic actually, because he's also basically ready to go again. But I don't think I would dare to go that far in such an important game. If he had like one or two games done already before this match happens, I would probably say Stanisic and give him that chance. But the way things are looking, I would probably go with Sula if it's just for the physical presence back there. I would really hope that he interprets this more as a right center back actually and doesn't go too far down the pitch. Definitely want to emphasize that. Really doesn't make it too dangerous. But yeah, I would still go with him, I think. Yes.
I guess if just to differentiate, I'll make an argument for Pavard at the right center back. He's been playing the last few games and doing okay. I think he was one of the better players this past weekend, and Niklas Sula's kind of been out for a few weeks. So it'd be tough for him to be thrown back in his first game be Dortmund. But being totally transparent, I would choose Sula over Pavard basically anytime. And then, yeah, Sebastian, I'm with you that it feels really strange to say this, but I trust Kingsley Coman right now more than I trust Serge Gnabry. Again, Gnabry's been gone for a bit, but on top of that, Kingsley Coman has looked really, really good. And I think that the role that Nagelsmann has set up as a bit of a wider role, it's more of a true winger with a little bit of defensive responsibility as well. I think that suits Kingsley Coman extremely well. And I think that he's been playing it very well on top of that. And so I would go Coman. And honestly, I may regret saying this, I wouldn't be too upset if we saw Benjamin Pavard in the starting lineup. But that, again, is kind of with a caveat, like you said, Sebastian, as long as it's more of a right center back role instead of a true right back role, because I don't think anyone is too keen on seeing Benjamin Pavard playing as an actual right back anytime soon. And I know if Tim was on here, he definitely would agree with me on that as well. That's all the time that we have for this episode, so we're going to wrap things up there. If you've enjoyed listening, or if you're a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there are a few ways that you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us over on Twitter and get in touch with us there. All of our episodes can be found on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.